Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. At this time, I will turn our conference call over to Mr. Barry Mandinack. Sir, you may begin.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. This is Barry Mandinack. I'm head of distribution at Virtus Investment Partners. It's day two in our series, the Virtus Volatility and Perspective Series, which is a series of market updates from Virtus sub-advisors. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by George Gadelius and Mike Kirkpatrick of Sykes Investment Advisors. George Sykes is head of leverage finance and is the senior portfolio manager of the Virtus Sykes Floating Rate High Income Fund. And Mike is the senior portfolio manager of the Virtus Sykes High Income Fund and the Virtus Sykes High Yield Fund. As concerns around COVID-19 materialized in the last several weeks, risk assets broadly sold off to levels that haven't been seen since the financial crisis. With this period of de-risking, bank loans and high yield have been no exception. And our discussions today are going to center around this volatility, what investors may expect over the coming months, and how the portfolios are positioned. I'd like to welcome all of you for joining us today. And George and Mike, I welcome both of you for joining us as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Okay. What I'd like to do is start with you, George, to give us some perspective on the bank loan world. You know, the three topics that I think are relevant to kick off the call are the peak-to-date performance of the category and your fund, the long-term case for the asset class and the fund, and also talking about current positioning and outlook on a go-forward basis. So if we could start with you, George, and then we'll go to Mike. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Barry. So we've obviously experienced, you know, unprecedented volatility with an unprecedented event, at least in our lifetime, as it relates to the virus. So, you know, we have been preparing for volatility, obviously not, you know, not predicting this kind of volatility, but we have been, you know, bringing the portfolio to a higher quality portfolio over the last, you know, really 12 to 16 months. So we're very much, you know, overweight higher quality, underweight lower quality. And, you know, what we've seen is a slight outperformance peak to trough, really. You know, we were essentially 10-ish basis points ahead of the benchmark, which the benchmark itself being down 1365 and ahead of most peers over this trough period. So we look at the landscape now, and, you know, obviously volatility brings about opportunity. There have been some very interesting trades that have been out there, in particular with respect to some very short-term maturities or with respect to deals that are, you know, M&A deals that are closing on a relatively short basis, Sprint, T-Mobile being one prime example of M&A that's fully financed and ready to close without any contingencies, and that closed today. So, you know, we will obviously emerge from this at some point, and, you know, we feel that we have a portfolio that is battle tested right now. We, you know, we have a mutual fund that was around pre 2008 crisis, so we've gone through volatility before. We outperformed by a lot in 2008, and that's, you know, that is what we're shooting for this year. So, you know, I think that the long-term case for the leveraged loan asset class really evolves around stable, you know, high-quality credits that are going to continue to perform and manage their balance sheets in a prudent way. And, you know, we're at a point now where if you kind of look at what do loans, how do loans perform when, you know, when spreads go, let's say, wider than 600? They're obviously much wider than that right now. But the 12-month forward return when spreads are above 600 historically is over 11%, and obviously much lower than that when spreads are below 600. So we view this as one of those rare opportunities where spreads blow out. And you have an opportunity where, you know, active management is going to make a difference. And, you know, right now, you know, we haven't changed really the quality of the portfolio, but we are staying very liquid. And with, you know, the cash that we have on hand, we're deploying it prudently and taking advantage of some of these short-term opportunities that, really present very strong double-digit type returns when you annualize it, because this could be, you know, a takeout that comes out in a month or two, and it might be trading at 92 or 95. So you might only be making 3 or 4 or 5 points, but it's over a very short period of time. So you're taking very little risk, and these are the types of securities that even on days like today are not really going to trade down a whole lot because of the certainty of the closing. So I think, you know, the loan asset class over the cycle presents, you know, on a risk-adjusted basis, very, you know, very solid historical kind of mid to upper single-digit returns. And entry point at today's levels, I think makes a lot of sense for investors that, you know, might have cashed out, let's say, a year ago when the Fed was first cutting and rates were declining. We did obviously see outflows in the asset class. So, you know, we think it makes a compelling case here. So I'll pause there and turn it over to Mike.
So, Barry, just to reiterate something that George said, we've seen unprecedented volatility, and with that, in our opinion, comes unprecedented opportunity. Your specific question is, how did we do versus our peers, peak to trough? And so we have three high-yield strategies. We have our high-yield SMA that's run more as part of our high-yield strategy, and then we have our full market strategy. So my comments will stay to the SMA and our high-yield strategy at the moment. But we performed at the very top of our peer group. Now, we're working with preliminary numbers for our high-yield SMA at the moment, but the preliminary numbers suggest that we have performed at the very top of our peer group in the sell-off, which is how we manage the portfolio, and that's given us some very solid longer-term numbers relative to our peer group, well into top quartile type of results.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, the positioning for high yield, why should somebody be thinking about high yield as an asset class in this environment at this time?
Well, I think one of the big reasons is you have that coupon working for you. So, I mean, if you look at the volatility of equities versus high yield does a better job of truncating on the downside. Now, our SMA and our high yield fund were more defensively positioned. Types of sectors that we own, cable, kind of stay-at-home type of industries, have held up very well in this market. So I think that, you know, when you look at the longer-term risk-reward profile of high-yield versus large-cap equities and small-cap equities, what you see is that you can still participate in the upside coming out of this, but taking out some of the downside that might be associated with, you know, more volatility in the equity market. So it's a good way to kind of ease your way into this market and take advantage of some of this volatility that we've seen.
Okay. And in terms of positioning on a go forward, from your perspective, given what's happening in the markets and the potential implications for a post-coronavirus world, are there certain industries that you find more attractive? Are you overweighting at this point versus previous, and others that you might be more concerned about and underweighting?
So the easiest one to talk about or concerning is the energy sector, and we came into this underweight and will likely remain so. But as I suggested, we've been really overweight the stay-at-home kinds of industries. Cable industry, Netflix as a specific kind of name. We also came into this with our biggest weighting in investment grade that we've ever had. So, and names that are generally holding in very well. And those are the names that we are selling to roll back into high yield. Now, the biggest opportunity we're seeing, and we think there's going to be more of it, is in the fallen angels. The investment grade names that are going to come down, they're going to be downgraded into high yield. We've taken advantage of a few of those already, but as they come in, the negative technicals of forced selling in the investment grade market gives us some great opportunities to really buy some high quality companies that are going through what we think are temporary, dealing with some temporary issues, and we can buy those bonds at very attractive rates. So, and maybe this is getting into too much detail, but the curves have become inverted, which means a lot of shorter dated bonds in some of these companies offer really significant yields. So, and the analysis is, you know, does this company have enough leverage to pull? Does it have the liquidity to meet its debt maturities for the next several years? And it's a bit of an easier kind of analysis. So that's where we're focused, and those are the best opportunities we're seeing at the moment. And those should be the kinds of companies that have the most levers to pull, again, to get through this kind of environment.
Now, with the dramatic slowdown, some would argue a shutdown in the economy, there's lots of concerns about rising default rates. How do you feel about that? That's a question to both of you in terms of how do you feel about forward-looking default rates and how do you deal with that from a portfolio construction perspective?
You know, we know that defaults are going to rise. You know, they're still well below historical averages. So, you know, we understand that. You know, as Mike alluded to, where, you know, we have been kind of re-underwriting names that are in the more impacted sectors, and if we feel that there's more downside than upside at, you know, at current levels, we are reducing or exiting those positions entirely and adding to names that are, you know, less impacted, you know, by the virus. So, and this is something we're always doing. It's, you know, obviously it's heightened now, but ultimately we are, you know, constant state of vigilance, which is what you want from active management. And, you know, you want to be, you know, looking at the portfolio, trying to look ahead 12 to 24 months on your credits to make sure that they have liquidity in case capital markets shut down, that they have, you know, access to a revolver and access to, you know, cash or an ABL that can be tapped to enhance liquidity. And clearly a lot of companies have tapped their revolvers over the last 3-4 weeks, and hopefully they'll never need it. But it's a prudent step, and that's what makes the difference about between a company making it and many times not making it. And again, we saw examples of that during the 08 crisis. So, you know, that kind of behavior is really, you know, implanted in our DNA, if you will, and that's something that, you know, we will manage through it. We do expect them to go up, but, you know, we feel we will outperform the market default experience. Sorry, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah, I just one thing to add. I mean, as always, as part of our analysis, we've focused on companies that have levers to pull in difficult markets environment to get through it. So, you know, companies with big market caps or large asset bases, you know, more predictable, steady kind of cash flow profile. So that's what we focused on, and, you know, that's paying off at the moment, owning those types of companies because they're trading much better. So, and it gives us some fodder for, you know, rolling into these fallen angels when they come our way. But as George suggested, sorry, Barry, but defaults are going up. And that's for sure. It's a lot of it's going to be felt in the energy space, but that, you know, that kind of uncertainty, you know, spreads are discounting a lot of that already where we are spread wise. So, you know, once we cross kind of 800-900 basis points in spread, you know, we're pricing in a recessionary environment. So we're already there.
I'll ask one more question, then we'll open it up for questions from the field. But a lot of people have characterized the previous 11 years prior to February 19th as kind of a rising tide lifts all boats market with really a tremendous shift in flows to passive investing. And many are saying that given what's happening of late, that there'll be more winners and losers on a go-forward basis and selectivity will become more important. Obviously, that's a bit self-serving in asking the question. But I would like your thoughts on that potential shift, and where do you see that happening?
I think, Barry, that, you know, looking at, you know, some of the passive strategies out there that, you know, are buying the top 100 names or 200 names and trying to replicate a market that might have 1,500 underlying issues is difficult. And sometimes you're forced to buy a very large cap name that's in trouble. So TXU being a great example of that from years ago. And, this is the time that, hopefully managers are earning their management fee. And in a leveraged asset class, be it loans or high yield, we think that's where you really are getting, you need to get into the weeds to discern, the winners from the losers. And so, whether it's our loan mutual fund or high yield mutual funds or even our very small loan ETF, which is actively managed, we feel that is the proper approach, in an asset class that, defaults are part of the asset class. And again, you want to outperform the market default experience in order to produce the better returns than your peers and the index. Otherwise, if you're just taking or just buy the biggest 50 or 100, it'll work at times. There are times when, money's coming into an asset class and everyone flocks to the bigger cap structures because that's the easiest thing to buy. And as we saw in March, also the easiest thing to sell. But, there could be airlines in there. There could be big, energy names or what have you. Are they going to make it? And so you've got to be able to, take those out and you find a small cable company that operates in the Midwest and has been just paying down debt for 5 years. That might get overlooked by an index, but it won't get overlooked by us.
Okay. Mike, anything to add to that before we open it up for questions?
No, I think George covered it.
Okay. Operator, if we could open up to the field for questions, please.
Thank you, sir. And we do have a question from the line of David Yost.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for the call. A couple of quick questions. I may have missed it. What are the current spreads in your space right now relative to where they were? And also, where in your space is the Fed participating? And thank you for your call.
Sorry, I missed the second part of your question.
Where would the Federal Reserve, are they doing any, is there any, I guess they're not buying anything double B and below, is that correct? I didn't know if there's
that, any. For now, that is correct, yes.
Okay, so any of the buying today doesn't have any backstop, so to speak, or in terms of Fed support, in terms of where these things could go, is what I was trying to understand.
Yeah, without getting too much in the weeds on structured products, the Fed did announce that they were going to be accepting some CLO debt, the highest rated tranche, the AAA tranche. So that did help support the CLO market, which indirectly helps the loan market because they are active and participants and big buyers in the leveraged loan space. But that was indirectly, so they're not directly buying double B or lower, to your point.
Okay.
Just something to add on that. Investment grade corporates has been an area that has been targeted. So, and certain industries. So the airlines obviously are one of the areas that have been targeted. Well, I guess that's more on the fiscal side than it is the Fed side. But the Fed has talked about investment-grade corporates. And there is a thought out there that, if the Fed is putting, supporting investment-grade corporates, that that's going to flow into higher quality, high yield. So, which is another argument for this asset class versus equities at the moment. We may not get as much volatility, but that's at this point, it's difficult to know how that's going to play out. But the Fed has said that they're going to focus on investment-grade corporates.
And with respect to your question on spreads, loan spreads before things started to go wider, right today we're right around 1,000. basis points, so 10%. And that was as of yesterday. I imagine it's going to be higher as of today. But as of yesterday, we were 1,000 relative to about 450 mid-February.
Thank you.
We're also at about high yield's also at about 1,000 basis points, which historically, George talked about this in his earlier comments, but it's been an opportune time to, from a high yield perspective, to invest in high yield at these spreads. There's been, so I'll just tell you, when spreads have crossed 1,000 basis points, so I did an analysis where looked at 1,000 basis points plus or minus 50 basis points, and historically there's been five of those times when spreads have crossed this area, and the average or the median annualized return over the next 1 year has been 26.68%, the median annualized return over 2 years, 19.5%, and 3 years, 14.77%. And the spreads widen out, those performance numbers historically have improved.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Mike. You were just hoping you would expand a little bit upon your answer about energy. Companies are very different and unique. My understanding is Whiting Petroleum filed for bankruptcy today. There's a handful of names in your portfolio where I'm sure the credit research is outstanding. I was just looking for some more color, please.
So I think that, you know, while we're underweight, it's for companies that are in the right parts of the Permian, they'll get through this. You know, if they have hedges in for this environment, and they have good low-cost assets and a good management team, they're going to get through this. So we own two Permian names in the portfolio. And then away from that, we own a couple of services names, which one is, I don't know how much detail I can get into, but one is has a their largest shareholder is Lowe's Corp. So we don't know if they will continue to be supportive, but they've been supportive in the past. There's no near-term debt maturities for the company. And then the other service company that we own has a significant amount of cash on the balance sheet, and they have a flexible business model. So we think they can get through this environment. And then we own a bond that is tied to an LNG facility. It's a secured bond for an LNG facility that has investment-grade counterparties with take-or-pay contracts. And that bond's been a little more volatile than we anticipated, but I think what everyone's doing is trying to figure out the potential counterparty risk. Now, they've made it through 2016. So, I mean, this has been stress-tested. I mean, this is obviously a different kind of environment, but we are watching the ratings for their counterparties just to see how that plays out, but even then they have it's secured by a very strong asset. So, you know, that's the bulk of what we have in the energy space. Oh, and a couple of pipelines that again have good. First of all, the what's happened here with the negative of oil is that it should improve some of the fundamentals for natural gas. And because of the decline in oil production should benefit, result in lower associated gas production, which should support, certainly reduce the supply side of natural gas. So it's, you know, some of the natural gas credits could actually come out of this. It's not in the near term, but ultimately could come out of this with a better environment. So we're comfortable with what we have in there, but we monitor it closely, and if something changes, we will look to exit.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Steve Angelus.
Thanks again on the call, guys. Question for you on the securitized loans. Do you look at those as an opportunity now since the prices have come down so much, or are they still too risky or too questionable from the standpoint of what's going on with the dislocation in that market and the coronavirus upheaval?
So just to clarify, when you say securitized loans, are you referring to CLO debt?
I am. And the loan market in general, but yes.
Yeah, so not going to say I'm the expert on CLO debt, but, you know, that market, like just about every other market, has experienced dislocation in the current environment. That market is a BWIC market, meaning that, you know, you're essentially putting out, if you're buying or selling, you're doing it not directly with, you know, the way you're trading a stock or a bond, but you're doing it by blasting out what you're looking for, and then people kind of come back with bids or offers. So it's a market that is you know, operates a little differently. And so that typically will experience more vol than in the leveraged loan market, which, despite historic outflows in March, has come out of this in incredible shape. If you believe the trade rags and the newspapers from last year, you would not think that the loan market can be as liquid as it's been. So it shows you the loan market's working, that liquidity is good, that you can settle loans quickly when you have to. And so there's obviously, you know, obviously loans have traded off here as well, just given, you know, the impact of the global impact of the virus. But, you know, I would consider the loan market a lot more liquid. And we've seen just, you know, outside of today, just the last 5-6 days, honestly a historic snapback. We didn't recoup all the losses, but 6-7 days of pretty sharp gains following the sell-off. So the market has performed well, and, you know, as the impact of the virus begins to subside, I think the asset class will again look very attractive.
So you feel the asset class, the loan market, is attractive, but not necessarily the collateralized loan market?
Well, just to make sure we're speaking about the same asset class, the securitized, you know, market, which would include everything that's securitized, from credit cards to auto loans to mortgages to CLOs, you know, again, the closest I come there is on the CLO side, so I don't want to speak to the rest of the securitized market. But, you know, just to give you an example on AAA, so that is the most liquid part of the CLO debt market. It is the, you know, gold standard, the highest quality. Even the Fed is buying back CLO AAA paper. That widened out as much as 650 basis points, which a month and a half ago we were at 130 basis points. But within a span of about a week, we're now at about 250 basis points. So still about twice as wide as where we were before the pandemic, but, you know, we have, you know, obviously recovered a tremendous amount of this sell-off already.
Got it. Thank you.
And our next question will come from the line of Michael Vestal.
Good. Hi, guys. Thank you for the call today. I really appreciate it. I wanted to get your thoughts on the current senior loan environment, and if you could just briefly maybe compare and contrast it with the 08 crisis, and just basically describe how they're maybe similar and how they're maybe a little bit different this time.
Yeah, of course. So from a quality perspective, I'll share a few numbers with you, and they're similar on both the high yield and bond side. So 2006, 2007, the majority of new issuance in the loan market was for LBOs, 60%. That number from 2015 to the end of last year was 35%, so almost half. The amount of issuance, which J.P. Morgan classifies as lower rated, which is essentially triple Cs, was 24%. In 06, 07, and that number today is 4%. Second liens, which are in essence, you know, bonds, but, you know, in loan form, was 9% of the market pre-Great Financial Crisis, and that number today is 3%. So, you know, not to say that, you know, that's the only three ways to measure the market, but those are you know, three important statistics as to the relative, you know, quality of the market pre-crisis versus today. So that, you know, hopefully gives you a sense of the difference between now and then.
Thank you.
And at this time, sir, there are no further questions in the queue.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. George and Mike, thank you so much for your time today as well. Virtus is committed to helping you get through these challenging times. A replay of this call and the others in this series will be made available in the Virtus Voices section of our website. For additional market commentary and portfolio-specific insights, please visit us at our website, virtus.com. And if you have any additional questions or would like further information, please don't hesitate to give us a call at 1-800-243-4361. That's 1-800-243-4361. Thanks, everybody, and have a safe, good evening. Bye.